Name is John Checo. I am a firefighter, fire instructor, cybersecurity person, developer, you name it, I've done it. Anybody know what this tool is? Halligan. Anybody know how much it weighs? About 20 to 30 pounds. This is a 4-to-1. A 4-to-1 means the leverage you get is 4 times to 1. This is what I teach with vehicle extrication. I will tell my students to actually open a car using just this tool. This is the universal tool for firefighters, whether it's fire or rescue. Now, we've talked a little bit before about who's been in an accident. If you've ever been in an accident where you're trapped in the vehicle, it is the scariest thing ever. People don't realize when you're in the vehicle, it's like an echo chamber. And someone goes to break the glass, someone goes to bang the door, it is like 100 times, especially if you're in shock or if you're nervous. So I like to say that this is really useful, but I'd rather get you out of the car using this. Okay? And there's ways of doing it because of CAN bus. So let's get into it. So who am I? Again, I have a long career in development and cybersecurity. I think I have to go over here now. I've started off as a developer, did some assembly programming, did some firmware programming for ultrasound machines. If you ever have cardiac ultrasound, I probably wrote the analog to digital software for that. And again, got into cybersecurity by accident. Got caught approving my own timesheets, but we won't talk about that. And ended up, again, getting this great cybersecurity career. On the side, though, I was actually... I was a firefighter since high school. It actually kept me out of jail. That's another story altogether. But I spent, since 1982, I've been a volunteer firefighter. I've been in engine companies, truck companies. I actually am now a fire instructor since 2010, so it's for the past 14 years. And I teach, one of the things I teach is vehicle extrication. The reason I teach is because the two departments I've been in the past 40 years, we're basically near major highways, and we had a lot of car accidents and a lot of really severe things. What I like to tell people is that as a firefighter for the 40 years, I've probably been to a couple of 100 structure fires. I don't really remember them. I remember maybe the first one I went to or the last big one I went to. I've been to almost 1,000 extrications, and I can remember every one. That's the impact that it leaves on you. So I started off actually... Wow, this is terrible. I actually started off as an introvert, and through firefighting and the family that I have and teaching, I actually became an extrovert. And that actually helped me in my other career, right, with cybersecurity. And that's kind of how I got into talking about this topic and teaching about cybersecurity in general. But let's get back into some of the terms if you don't know them already. There's something called drive-by-wire. So planes are usually drive-by-wire, right? In the old cars, we actually had gears and knuckles and transfer cases to actually, when you turn the wheel, it actually turned the pinion. But when you get into airplanes and some of the modern vehicles, they're drive-by-wire. So you turn your steering wheel, it goes to an actuator, and the actuator would actually have a physical wire that went to another actuator by the pinions and turn the wheels. And then we get into CAN bus, because with this drive-by-wire, a lot of things were now basically being logged by the CAN bus and for diagnostic purposes. But CAN bus is really smart. So they started using CAN bus, I say, offensively rather than defensively. They actually started using CAN bus to send out commands. And so now we have this new thing called drive-by command, where when you go to turn the steering wheel, the actuator just doesn't send a signal to the pinion. It actually sends a signal to the main controller and sends it a command and says, hey, turn the wheels this many degrees. And anybody who's been involved in FIRST Robotics and some of the Lego Mindstorm stuff, you know that there's calculations and they give you how much turning radius and how much resistance you have. So there's a lot of robotics in that today. So those are some of the things you have to kind of think about when we're thinking about CAN bus. Now, interestingly enough, the CAN bus protocol is a standard, but the commands aren't. So the way CAN bus works in every car, it communicates the same way. The problem is that every manufacturer has a different command for their operations. And so something like engine speed here, which is, you know, SG engine speed, I forget what the CAN ID is, that same CAN ID in a Volvo might mean brake, right? So it's unfortunate that they never standardize on the commands across cars. And this becomes an issue later on when we start talking about how to work with CAN bus. So put on my programmer's hat, if everything in a vehicle is software controlled, you know, we know that hackers can take advantage of it, and they have. In fact, we remember Chris Roberts, right, with the USB connection in the airplane, but we won't, I don't know how true or how false that is. I've gotten differing stories. I'm a member of InfraGuard, and I work with the FBI very closely, and they have one story, and of course, Chris Roberts has another story, and the airlines have even another story. We also talk about the Jeep, right, with Charlie Miller and Chris Valasek, and that they took basically a Jeep that was driving, and it was a test, obviously, and they were able to take over the CAN bus and send it a command to make it turn right off the road. Real simple test, but that means that software is fallible, right? Anything that's controlled by software can be controlled by you. And then, of course, we have other ways where cars are thieves are stealing cars by basically tapping into CAN bus, right, and inserting their own commands to get the car to unlock and to start. And they talk about cutting holes in the bodywork. That's because the headlight sensor actually is part of the CAN bus. It's a two-way communication, and that was easy access to plug in your own module to redefine that sensor. If they knew this, there's an air leveling sensor under the rear axle of most cars that is wide open. They didn't have to actually get to the body, but I guess the thieves didn't know about that too much. But you know, with that particular hack, they found that they started looking at all the other car manufacturers. They found that they all have that same problem. Why? Because the CAN bus network protocol is the same, right? There's levels of security on CAN bus, but still, it's an API-driven system. And next time you get in your car and you go to make that left turn, just think about that. Now put on my firefighter's helmet. If everything in the vehicle is software controlled, well, why can't I use it to my advantage, right? If I can stop the car, if a hacker can stop a car, why can't I stop a car? If a hacker can, you know, disable a car, why can't I disable a car? If a hacker can roll down the windows, why can't I roll down the windows? And this is whole really the talk of this, the purpose of this talk. So I'm going to show you a few videos. There's one gruesome video, and if anybody is queasy, I can either skip it or just if you can leave the room. But I'll tell you when that goes, when that happens. So this is the first video of basically what is auto extrication.
Auto extrication is the term used to describe the techniques, the tools, and the procedures we use to remove somebody who's entrapped in their vehicle, who cannot exit the vehicle under the normal means.
So,
auto extrication is the term.
Sorry. So, with extrication, it has its inherent dangers, right? So we're trying to open up a car, make access for an EMT to get in there and get to the patient or to the victim and assess them. The second part we have to do is we have to create a bigger hole called egress. And with egress, we have to make sure that everyone, we can pull the patient out properly without creating more damage. You know, we always want to leave every situation better than we started. The third part is exigency measures, meaning that we have to watch to make sure the car doesn't catch fire, doesn't roll down the hills, so on and so forth. But we have some really big problems because cars these days have crumple zones, right? And that's great for the cabin. It protects the passengers. What's in the crumple zone? Your gas tank? Right? So years ago, you know, cars very rarely caught on fire from an accident, right? We always had this this notion as firefighters that if car gets to an accident, you know, that's movie stuff. It won't catch fire. But now with crumple zones, cars are catching fire even for minor accidents because they're impinging on the gas tank. So we have to always worry about that. I personally was involved in a Tesla that caught fire. The driver could not get out. Anybody have a Tesla? Come on, raise your hands. You know you do. So Teslas have electronic doors. Anybody have an EV with an electronic door? Right? You just touch the door and it goes open, right? Isn't that cool? What happens when you get in an accident and the electricity is cut off? Right? Anybody know that every one of these EVs by law has to have a manual override for the door? Do you know where Tesla's manual override for the door is?
Depends on which model, that's the problem.
It's actually, if you have that left armrest that you touch normally, there's a crown around the front of it, and you pull the crown off to get to the manual handle. Some models have the handle under the crown, so you have to reach under. Now think about this, you got into an accident, your seatbelt just tightened up on you, right? You're nervous. Are you gonna remember that? No. And that's it. A lot of times these dealers tell you have the manual override, but they don't actually tell you, show you, or make you do it. To me, big thing is you have to do it yourself to understand it. So we actually had this, unfortunately, the driver passed away. He could not get out of the car. But that's one of the big problems that we have with these new cars today. Also, firefighters have problems because they don't know the situation they're getting into, right? They're showing up at a scene. They didn't see the crash. They only see the aftermath of the crash. They don't know how many people are involved, where they're involved. We're trying to assess that. Sometimes we make our own mistakes. With this firefighter, he saw the driver was impinged against the door. He went around the car, or actually over the car, to get to the other side. And on the other side was the barrier that led to the edge of the bridge and fell off the bridge and ended up passing away. Again, it was in the middle of the night. He was not aware that that was...
tremendous explosion. I felt myself ejected from the car, violently propelled from the car, as a matter of fact, landing on my back. At that point, I had no idea what happened, whether the tool had blown up, the car itself had blown up.
So airbags. Airbags, big thing, right? Anybody know why your seatbelt tightens you when you get into an accident? So you don't hit the airbag while it's inflating. You hit the airbag while it's deflating. That's how it absorbs your force, right? It's like 700 PSI that's coming at you. You don't want to hit it. So the seatbelt pulls you back, and by the time you get lurched forward, it's actually deflating. Imagine that you're working on a car, trying to get someone out, and it deploys because of an electrical short, or because of some are chemical and some are electrical, but something happens. So it's always been a big thing. Then you have these cars that run on fobs, right? This happened just in Brooklyn, right? Anybody here from New York remember this? Yes. So what happened? They went to go, the car went on its side, and they took the fob out, but the fob wasn't far enough away, and the car was still active because the fob was still within range. And when you get to a car accident, does the car automatically go in park? No, it's still in drive. And as soon as that car got a little traction, because the firefighter's weight was on, waiting, it kept going forward. He broke his leg, he suffered, that was all he had, which, thank God. But again, these are the things that we have to worry about. So this is the basics here. We talked about stabilizing the vehicle, make sure it doesn't go anywhere, creating access for EMS, and creating egress. The second thing we have to worry about is that we have to look for fire and some other emergency measures. We call them exigency measures to make sure that everything is safe. And then we have to figure out, well, how are we going to attack this car? Is there a plan A, plan B, plan C, right? So plan A right now is our Jaws of Life and our Halligan. Maybe plan B is a Sawzall. These are the things we have to think of. But wouldn't it be great if we didn't have to think about all that? So let's get into what I teach. So I teach extrication, and I teach a lot of, I time my students as I teach them to get a baseline of how well they're doing. So if you're talking about external stabilization is basically making sure the car doesn't roll down the hill, right? Or make sure that the car is in park, or make sure the car is turned off, right? Some of the basic things that you don't think of when you ride out.
Oh, then you felt so bad, negative.
Oi!
Oh, you helvete.
I thought you had a new Toyota.
It's actually happening the next time over for me. But I had a video of the next time over. I'm really upset. Their mistake.
But this is, this happens. It's not uncommon. Second thing is interior stabilization, right? So make sure the ignition's off. Make sure that we have, that there's no power to this system. You can. I'm just showing one method. I actually teach four different methods for opening up a hood, but the whole idea is that opening up a hood takes time, and for what purpose, right? To shut off the power so we can get the access to the victim.
They've hidden the release.
Yeah. A little note. Where's your battery in your car? Where do you think your battery is? Your 12-volt battery. Under the hood, right?
I have no idea.
Cadillacs are under the front seat. BMWs, the EV, and in the hybrid models, the 12-volt battery is in the trunk, and the high-voltage battery is in the engine compartment. So it's exactly opposite of what you would think. Again, you should know that, but we have to know that, because if we cut the wrong thing, things happen. Okay, so then we talk about the next thing, EMS access. So as soon as we get any type of opening, we send a firefighter in there to stabilize the victim, because the biggest problem we worry about is spinal injuries. So we have to make sure we secure the spine. Then we have to basically create access for the EMT.
After gaining access to the patient, the first provider, whenever possible, assumes a position behind the patient and begins manual stabilization of the patient's head and neck.
Then we have to make sure, to get access, we want to try and take out all the glass that we need to do.
Anytime we're going to be cutting a windshield, make sure you take the time to cover your patient with a tarp. As you'll see in some videos coming up, a lot of glass dust is generated when we cut windshields. So take the time and take a tarp or some kind of a cover to cover that patient up.
In an accident. Third thing is now we have to basically create an access. So
another option when going pin side is to go from the top versus the side. Make sure that inside fork is pushing firmly against a post, and the outside fork is pushing the door out as opposed to forward. Once our pin is defeated, then we can go ahead and defeat the hinges. We can either cut or spread. Once again, if you're going to cut, try to go more vertical as opposed to horizontal.
Doors were swinging open, and kids were flying out when cars made turns. So the nadir pin is extra strength steel, high strength steel. The hinges are high strength steel, all because of Ralph Nader, which makes it even more difficult for us to open. But here's the thing, right? Safety, right? Safety and usability. They have that balance, just like in cybersecurity. Then third thing, victim egress. And if you notice, I put in total times. These are basically my test times for my students. For running the exercise. So if you think about this total for just creating, after we've done the access, just creating the egress part is about an hour to run through. And that's worst case scenario. So if you think about this, an extrication can run anywhere from 15 minutes to 2 hours in general. So the dash roll.
And we have hydraulic rams. That kind of makes up the hydraulic component of what we have.
Fantastic.
Or get your feet trapped, and that becomes an issue. We'll see that a little later on in real life. Not in real life, but in real video. Yeah, somebody want to donate their car?
So now we have access to the victim that can't get them out of. So now we have to actually cut open side of the car.
Make your last relief cut vertically downward just inside the seat post, following the angle of the wheel well.
Get that open.
Pinch your spreader onto the third door and push it down to the ground, creating a large access to the back seat.
So now, this whole time, right, your victim is in that seat just waiting to be taken out. He's thinking, what the hell's taking so long? And, you know, it's a real issue. Lastly, we always teach what we call roof removal.
A lot of times that sawzall is going to zip through there a lot quicker. Once again, anything we can do to reduce our on-scene time, the better for the patient.
Want to pop, create that third door, or what they call it.
Once it's time to remove the roof, make sure you're aware of your patient. We don't want to drag anything over the patient, and make sure you have plenty of help.
With EMS, if they have spinal injuries, that might not be an option. All right, so I've gone through a lot of this ad nauseum, and I...
Every second that we can't get into that car is detrimental to that patient. So this is a skill that we need to be very efficient at. We need to know what we're doing. So training on it is something that we do quite frequently around here.
So take the victim out of the car. Also, again, one of the things you have to be careful of, you just can't grab them and go. Actually, there's one case where you can grab a victim and go, and if you had to chop off the foot, you would. And that's if the car's on fire or it's gonna go down a hill or something like that, and they have to come out. Only had to do that once in 40 years, so I'm happy about that, but it does happen. And what happens? Why is this such a big issue these days? Why are things getting harder and harder to cut open, to open up? Because everything is hardened steel. We have what they call boron steel. Boron steel is basically super hardened steel, and it the more pressure you put on it, sir?
There's a question at the end. I'll wait for the end.
You can ask a question now.
So I went to school where I wanted to be an EMT, and one of the main questions I have in this line is, so actually ties into these are harder steels. How do we cut through that top piece, like creating that third door that you were talking about?
So if you look at this diagram here, and the question was, how do you cut through this hard boron steel? So if you look at this diagram here, and I can circle it. I don't know if you can see my mouse, but the top post where it's connected to the door is actually a weak spot. That doesn't mean it's not hardened. It's just a weak spot. And the way boron steel works is the more you compress it, the harder it gets. Okay? Which means that if you have a cutter and it's just closing on it, right, it'll compress and get harder and harder. So what we do is we have special cutters that cut at a certain rate that's fast enough to heat up the boron and cracks the steel. We're not actually cutting through it, we're cracking through it. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so this video is the one that's a little bit gruesome. I don't know if anybody, is everyone going to be okay with a little blood? Yes? I know, this is why you come to Hope, right? I don't know, I didn't stay last night, so I don't know how much blood there was last night, so. So this is a real accident. I'll shorten the video a little bit. It's about 4 minutes, but here you have a car going into the back of a box truck. How many times have you seen this on the highway? You see it a lot. Listen, I don't know what they're teaching in the driving schools these days, but if you can't see a big box truck in front of you, I don't know. Do you hear the victim screaming? You don't hear sound. You know why? Now, where are my EMS people? Why aren't they making a sound? Now he's breathing. Shock. They're in shock. Sometimes the pain is so much that you cannot scream. That's one of the first things I learned when I was a firefighter and doing education, is that there's a point where people cry like a baby, and a point where people stop. You'll tell you as long as it's So, talk about exorcist mode, right? What's happening now? It's stuck, now it's stuck, now it's stuck, it's stuck that way. You have to maintain that now. Now that you have to do that, get over the stuff to put the fire out
on top of what we're doing to get the victim out. How many people? One guy, it's only for one guy. How many firefighters do we have there? How many firefighters are doing nothing? How many cops are doing nothing?
Just Just saying. Just saying.
All right, so I'm going to beat this up a bit. There's the victim. He's actually very well awake. He's in pain, but he's awake. And that's a good sign. That's a good sign. What you don't want is you don't want anyone to pass out on you. He's in a precarious situation, but in this particular case, that whole dashboard came down on his legs. So they have to kind of lift that dashboard. But that, remember that dashboard roll, that little video we showed you? We can't do that here, right? So now what's our plan B, right? So plan B is they took the air out of the tires. They're trying to lift the truck. That way they can get a little bit of room. And then finally what they do is once they get a little bit of room, they actually winch the truck out a little bit. Normally we don't move vehicles with victims in it, but in this case we did to move them out. And actually then we were able to do the dash roll. Let's see if I can get to the point where, take them out. Got the ambulance ready. Okay, he's good. He's like, I'm in pain. What he's doing here, you see what he's doing here? He's actually cutting the hinges on the seat. Okay, we talked about being able to, if we can roll the seat back, that's great, right? Now, he's out, he's good. A lot of work. That entire sequence, it was 4 minutes, it took about 2 hours. So, how do we fix this? How do we make life better? How do we use Canvas? How do we use software programming to fix this?
Well, the idea I had was, if you go to a building and the fire alarm goes off, the elevators have this little red hat, fireman's hat in it, called fire service mode. Do you know what that is? Right? You've seen Chicago Fire, come on. Right? They get in, they turn the key, you know, everything works, right? The elevators go into what they call a recall mode. So, basically, there's two phases to fire service mode in an elevator. Recall mode, meaning go to a stable position, right? Get to a position where I can do everything else from. And that means all the elevators either go to the bottom floor, or in some cases, they will go to a safe floor, right? In a lot of larger buildings, they have staggered elevator systems. So they're not all going to actually go to the lowest floor. They'll go to a safe floor, right? Phase two is movement. Basically, now that the elevator's in a safe position, I, as a firefighter, can control what happens next. Normally, what we do is we will shuttle equipment up and down elevators. We will not take the elevators ourselves. That's a no-no, because if the fire's in the elevator, it becomes a chimney. Even though I'm a little heavy, I actually am in shape. So it sounds simple, right? Let's have fire service mode for cars. Why not? Well, it's not that simple, right? We have to now think about that whole thing, stabilization, access, and egress. So stabilization. Well, we only want to stabilize when the airbag sensor is going off, right? If we try and stabilize the car before that happens, then a lot of people can use it, you know, to brick cars. We don't want to brick cars. So what are we going to do? Well, we want to maybe turn off the engine, right? Hit the parking brake. Maybe shut the fuel flow, if it's an EV, disconnect the high power from the low power. Right? And if it's a really fancy car, you can actually deflate the tires. But, you know, if we could do all those things automatically, that saves us a lot of time. Right? That now we can, we hit that and we can go up to the car and we can say, all this is done. We don't have to open up the hood. Right? We don't have to chock the wheels. We don't have to worry about the fuel or basically shut the car off, get inside to shut the car off. We will. Okay, I'm getting there. You're a great wingman. All right, so the access mode, right? So access mode says after you've done all that, well, maybe we want to be able to disable the airbags, right, so we don't get hurt. And then unlock all the doors. Automatically unlock the doors. Make it easy for me. And maybe in a case where I can, maybe I hit a button and roll down the window so I don't have to break the windows. I can just get in there, right? And then maybe In another case, another button, we actually unlatch the doors. So all we have to do is pull them open, especially for those Teslas. These are the things that we can do just to get access. From an egress standpoint, right? We talked about that dash roll. What's the purpose of the dash roll, right? Get the dashboard off the person's legs. Well, there's other ways of doing that, like raising the steering column, which every car has that these days, right? Lowering the seats. If you have electronic seats, the seats all move. Lower the seat, push the seat back, recline the seat. These are all things that we can just do electronically and get that person out. And then, of course, there's fire control, and I'll talk about this in a little bit, but basically having a sprinkler system or some other fire retardant system. It's been tested. It doesn't work very well, but again, you have to think about this. I'll digress a little bit. In an EV, where's the battery pack? Under your feet. How is it strengthened? Well, it's strengthened on the bottom and the sides because if you don't want to hit a rock and open up your batteries, right? Where's the weakest point? The shroud on top. Shroud on top is made of plexiglass. When an EV catches fire, which way is the fire going to go? Up. Where? Into the passenger cabin. So who's the person at danger at most when the car catches fire? You are. So again, even though sprinkler systems in cars have been tried and not really effective, maybe they can be used to increase survivability, right? They're not going to put out the fire, but they may increase the survivability. So if I took some of the benefits calculated, and this is just an estimate, right? Can I cut down 2 hours to less than an hour? Yes, I can, if everything works. But if everything doesn't work, even if only 25% effective, I've taken 15 minutes off of my operations. These are things that I don't have to think of and prepare for. So yes, if something doesn't always work, right, we still use our tried and true Halligan, right? But we don't have to. I move from the podium. All right, so how do we do this? It's real simple workflow. I'm a programmer, right? So basically, the workflow is, you have that universal firefighter fob that I showed you before, and you press it once, and it says, okay, if the crash sensor is set, then you set the parking brake and de-energize. If you press it again, maybe you disable the airbags, unlock the doors, or maybe open the windows. And then finally, you can raise the steering column and do all the egress methods. Real simple, right? And then how do we know it's done? Well, maybe if the CAN bus is still working, it can Bluetooth back to us or back to that sensor some of the things that it can do and can't do, right? In fact, if we had a sensor like this with little lights on it, we could say, hey, what worked and what didn't work, right? That way we know what we have to do, right? These are all the things that we know that we can do. And basically, I'll do the other animation. So that sounds all good, right? Everything's great in theory. We're all programmers. Everything works in design, right? What's the reality check here? We'll get to that. But I contacted a friend of mine, Kat DeLorean, the daughter of John DeLorean. She is now coming out with a car company. Actually, she's coming out with a STEM program that builds cars. It's pretty cool stuff. So I talked to her a little bit, and I said, listen, want to do this fire rescue type of mode? You're building a new car. Can we collaborate? And she's like, absolutely. I worked with her at Bank of America. She was a red teamer at Bank of America. Very smart. And now she's on her new career building cars and teaching STEM to the folks. So I thought this was awesome. But she said there's a reality check here, right? My perspective is of a first responder, right? I'm going to follow what they call National Fire Protection Association rules. I'm going to use standardized protocols and processes. But she says, well, wait a minute. We have those with vehicle manufacturers. We have to follow NHTSA, right? We have to understand and test before we can build. We have to drive something for 200,000 miles before we can release it. So it's not something that's so simple. In fact, she said sometimes we can actually, if we can optimize some of these things, we may be able to get it past the testing phase because it's not a new feature. It's an existing feature that we're reutilizing, right? So minor code changes. So the nice thing about CAN bus is these modes, we'll call it access mode, egress mode, and fire safety mode, right? Even though every CAN bus has a different data dictionary for the commands, if we standardize on the commands for access, egress, and fire service mode, and all they are batches of the existing commands that exist today in your DBC data definitions, every manufacturer can implement it today. They don't have to make any major changes. They just have to add three standardized commands that only batch the existing commands they have. Does that make sense? Right? That's cool. Problem is that the NHTSA doesn't see it that way, right? They see these as new features, and we have to figure out what's going to be a new feature and what's not going to be a new feature. So automatic engagement of the parking brake. It's actually there because when you pull the button up on the parking brake, it's electronic. But if we're going to put it on a fob, they say we have to test drive it for 50,000 miles, right? Self-deflating tires, already on new cars. But if we're going to put it on a fob, right, we have to test it. Disabling airbag triggers, something that's never been done before. It's there. It's just never been added as a command. So the NHTSA says, how are you going to test that? And this comes back into how can it be abused? Automatic reclining of driver's seats and raising of the steering column, right? Again, it's all attached to the fob. They don't understand. Now, the reality is, does this fob actually do anything? Where's that code? It's in the car. The car's doing it. We're not doing it. We're just executing a command that's already in the car. But again, we have to have negotiations with the National Highway and Traffic Safety Administration to make sure we can do that. You know, if we have to make actuator changes, right, and then when we're designing a new car, we may add some new actuators. Every actuator has to go through that 200,000-mile test. So we're going to try and not add as actuators to the system and work with what we have, but that's going to be another issue we're talking about. So exploiting CAN bus. Well, yes, can this be used as a physical kill switch? Absolutely. Imagine Joe Blow having this fob, right? And again, it's a universal fob for all cars. And he goes up to a car and he just hits the kill switch, right? He can brick a car, right? So that's why we always say that crash sensor has to be the first thing that enables this. The crash sensor hasn't gone off, the airbag hasn't gone off, we're not going to be able to do that. And then, of course, CAN bus encryption. If the CAN bus isn't encrypted, right, the old versions of CAN bus, can you execute those commands without using a fob? Absolutely. So how are we going to prevent that from happening? Now, the CAN bus 2.0, I believe, has two layers of networking, navigation and operations. Entertainment and operations. And they each one is encrypted differently. They can't communicate with each other. I don't want to get into too much details, but it does have some capabilities for encryption. So let's go back to geeking out. Anybody know the cybersecurity framework? Sunil Yu, right? Sunil CSF, the asset management, right? That's actually been out there for a while. That's cool. That's what we do for cybersecurity. Well, how do we apply that to auto safety, right? Identify, protect, detect, respond, and rescue. Let's make it that recovery, rescue, right? These are all the things we're going to do. All the things in black are things that are already there. All the things in blue are things that are there that we just haven't activated yet. And all the things in red are things that we may have to add an actuator for. Does that make sense? So, again, I don't think it's that difficult. It's just a matter of trying to get through the politics, through the regulations, and getting manufacturers to do this. So, how much time do I have left? Good. All right. So let's go from ideation to implementation. The sub and security concerns, right? How do we prevent everyone from having one of these? Well, we can't, but there's something in the fire service. We have something called a Knox box. So a Knox box is, if you're a commercial facility, you keep all your keys in a box that has a special lock outside. And the only person who can undo that lock is dispatch. And we could do the same thing with these fobs. They can be stored in that Knox box. So that way, nobody can get access to it unless you call dispatch and say, dispatch, I need a Knox box code to open up for this vehicle fire, for this accident. And they send it. It's logged. It's reported. So the abuses are minimal. Again, fire service mode. We don't this. We can press this all we want, but if there's no airbag that went off, it's not going to do anything. We have to have that safety feature. And also, once it's engaged, right? Once it's engaged, there's no going back. You can't use this to steal a car because once you shut it, once you get into that fire service mode, that car is bricked. Okay. How many car accidents do you go to that where the car is actually, you know, salvageable? Most accidents I go to, if it's a car fire or it's a major accident, it's junked anyway. So bricking the car is no big deal to me. You have a question? No. All right. Once activated, no other key fobs like that one we saw with the car in Brooklyn. Once it's activated, no other fobs will work on that car. That's another safety feature. Again, it only supports degradation, meaning we can only go from one stage to more degradation stage. We can never go backwards on that. And again, geofencing, meaning the fob should only work 12 to 18 inches from within the car that you're operating with. Otherwise, those cops that are doing nothing, I'd do their car. Anyway, that's not being taped, is it? All right, so let's talk about, you know, again, being able to do this. Well, listen, you have these car manufacturers can actually build the firmware today. They don't. There's nothing that fob related about this. They can actually build that today and actually maybe have switches under the dashboard for the fire service or switches in the engine compartment for the fire service. It can be done today because it's all software. It's again, we talked about it, it's only batching. There's no new parts or electronics needed for existing vehicles. Think about this. If this came out today, your car, you go to the dealer and have your car have a firmware update, and you can have this today. We don't have to wait for a new car. Sir?
Reversing and then flipping the bits that, or whatever you would need to do in the firmware, and then reflashing that device. Like he has a BMW, and we're thinking about doing
that. You're talking about jailbreaking your car?
Yes.
I'm sure there's a market for it, and I've seen that with some of the racing cars where they actually put their own firmware in to change the timing and the combustion. You could do that, right? There are DBC data definitions available on the web for every single car manufacturer out there. There's a dongle you can put in your D-sub under your car called iFixit or just Fix It. And all it does is goes to your phone and tells you the codes based on your car, because the codes for every car is going to be different. Question?
Yeah, I work for a company that I do not claim I'm trying to leave them. But they do a lot of remanufacturing of ECMs, of engine computers,
okay,
for particularly older cars that are utilizing this CAN network. I would love to know a way to at least be able to ask them to implement a way that would make these cars more electrical. How can I go about doing that?
Okay, so if we can get it done, listen, all we need to do is get one manufacturer to do this. But here's the rub, right? The politics of it, right? Is there a reason for a manufacturer to do this? For them to go through these extra testing, right? It's not adding, even though it doesn't cost them anything to implement, it costs them something to implement because now they have to retest the car, right? And they can get an HTSA buy-in that existing functionality doesn't have to be retested. It'd probably be a no-brainer. But does it give them anything? Does it buy them anything? No. Right? Do you want to, if you buy a house and they say, hey, you got a sprinkler system in your house, are you going to pay more for that house? Nah. It's great. I believe in it. Great safety feature, but it's ugly as shit. Right? So is you going to go to a car manufacturer and say, hey, I get trapped and I'm going to die and they can come save me? Who's going to ask that question? And what vehicle manufacturer is going to say, oh yeah, you know, they'll pull you out, no problem. It's not their mentality.
It could be.
And I'll tell you right now. So we want to create standards. What I did was when we came up with this idea, I applied for a provisional patent. Hopefully, it goes to patent application and patent. The whole idea is that I'm patenting it so that way it could be outsourced freely. So no single manufacturer could say, we own this type of capability. And again, I'm doing this with DeLorean. Kat is very on board with this. And so once it does get patented, she, in fact, all of the work that she's doing in her work with the new build on the DNG motors is going to be open. And I think that's cool because. So I have 5 minutes for Q&A. If you want to contact me, my checkout.com. If you, especially if you're a CAN bus programmer, because Kat and I are trying to create a CAN bus capture the flag for the Detroit Auto Show. Question.
The first thing that, I noticed when you were going through the things of what happened automatically, moving the seat back. What if there's a passenger in this?
So I'll tell you, so I've been to a ton of accidents. And one of the accidents, unfortunately, happened on Father's Day. Tree fell on a truck. Driver, the father died. The brother was driving, and the daughter was in the back seat. And he was pinned under the dashboard. Tree was on the dashboard. Dashboard was on him. And her leg was caught under the front seat. So I can't get him out until I get her out, right? And so what we had to do is we had to cut the back seat out to get room to get her out, right? And then we moved the front seat back. And we used the jaws of life to move the front seat back.
I'm just concerned with it automatically.
No, so again, the whole idea here is that we want to have control. So, like, I'm not going to open up the windows if the car is, like, in a lake, right? So we want to have control. And, you know, I simplified this, right, the access egress. But ideally, you'd want to be able to say, oh, maybe you press access twice to do the same thing, right? Or you press access three times to get to the third thing. So, again, that all has to be worked out. But, yes, I agree. You have to – it's all context relative. The one to the right there. Not yet, but please send me some contact info. You had a question?
Yeah, two questions. One, for our suggestion. One, insurance companies should like this, right?
Yeah, well, we've talked about approaching them once it's prototyped. Yeah. Because, again, the DeLorean is usually going to be a super expensive car to insure. So having that capability is important.
And then my question, I've been in the back of a lot of armored vehicles in different places. The Apollo vehicle always had this really massive saw, but nobody ever talked about how you actually use it to get
the You're talking about the circular saw, the K-12s?
Yeah,
so K-12s, but the problem is super loud, create a lot of sparks, and scare the shit out of people, and if you're not competent in it, you will lose a finger. I teach that as well, so. Okay. Question over here.
Do you have any, or do you know of any existing systems in something like a racing application? Is that something that, you could see an application in like Formula One or something like that?
So, look at that, that's my timer. So yeah, racing cars do this physically. They actually create a lot of, nothing is electronic. Everything is a quick release. So that, because again, especially with racing fuel, it's invisible. So you catch fire, you don't even know it. I mean, you know it, but nobody else knows it. but yes, that's they're there, but they're physical means. I don't think I'd put electronics into a racing car just yet. Last question. I'm sorry. I'll let you go.
Have you had any luck having early conversations with politicians? We don't have someone who's active in the way that Ralph Nader is on safety right now. Have you had any initial conversations?
Not yet. Kat and I are trying to figure out how we want to approach this, because I think if we approach it the wrong way, it's going to fall flat on its face. So we have to make sure we get champions. And if we can get a champion, then we can start expanding that role. So it's in our thought process. We just haven't got that initial feed yet. Thank you.
You can't be partisan.
Can't be what?
Partisan.
No, I'm gonna cut that off right here. All right, well, thank you.